Chapter 5.
All opponents are not necessarily enemies, but both enemies and opponents carry certain characteristics in common. Both perceive their opposite as an obstacle, or an opportunity, or a threat. Sometimes the threat is personal. Other times, it is a perceived violation of standards or accepted norms of society. In mildest form, the opponent's attacks are verbal. The warrior must choose which of those to stand against and which to ignore. Often that decision is taken from his hands by others. In those cases, lack of discipline may dissuade the opponent from further attacks. More often, though, the opponent finds himself encouraged to continue or intensify the attacks. It is when the attacks become physical that the warrior must make the most dangerous of choices.
"Don't you see?" Vanto demanded.
His voice is harsh and strident. His hand gestures are wide and expansive. He is angry and frustrated.
"If you keep ignoring these episodes, they're just gonna get worse."
"How would you have me respond?" Thrawn asked.
"You need to tell Commandant Dainlark," Vanto said.
His voice is still harsh, but his gestures are calming. The anger abates, but the frustration remains.
"A month in and you've already had run-ins with 4 separate cadets."
"3, Thrawn corrected. "The second incident was unintended."
"You only think that because you're not up on core world slang," Vanto said.
He makes a gesture mimicking that of the supposed insult.
"That isn't in any way a mark of respect."
"But I have seen similar gestures without such intent."
"Not in the core worlds, you haven't."
Vanto sweeps his hand crosswise in front of him, indicating dismissal.
"Look, 3 or 4, it doesn't matter. What matters is that you're not being respected, and Dainlark needs to know that."
"To what end?" Thrawn asked.
"Look."
Vanto pauses, the muscles in his jaw tensing and relaxing as he prepares his statement.
"The Emperor himself put you here. Even if no one else knows that, Dainlark does. For his sake, you need to let him know. Because if the Emperor finds out that this has been happening and Dainlark hasn't done anything, there will be trouble."
"Commandant Dainlark is in a poor tactical position," Thrawn said. "If he is told and does nothing, he risks attack by the Emperor. If he hears and acts, he risks attack by the families of the cadets."
"So what would a good tactician do?"
"Ideally, he would withdraw to a better position or a different time," Thrawn said. "In this case, he can do neither." Vanto looks toward the window. His facial heat is fading. He grows more deeply in understanding of the situation.
"So what you're saying is that we're stuck?"
"Only for 2 more months," Thrawn said. "We then graduate and leave this place.
And you finally get to put on that lieutenant's rank plaque," Vanto said.
He returns his gaze and points to the pocket where the plaque is customarily concealed. His facial and throat muscles again tighten briefly. His frustration increases.
"Are you disturbed by that?" "Disturbed by what?" Vanto asked.
His voice deepens and grows more harsh. Frustration, but also resentment.
"That you're getting through 4 years of academy training in 3 months, and then jumping a rank on everyone else on top of it?"
"Have you forgotten I have already passed through many years of military experience?" Vanto again turns his face away.
"I know that. I just sometimes forget that you..." "I'm sorry I even brought it up."
His face smooths out as the resentment fades. His hands open and close briefly with embarrassment.
I understand, Thrawn said. Do not be concerned. The incidents will stop when the offenders are emboldened enough to push their actions too far.
Vanto's eyes narrow. He is surprised now, with growing disbelief and suspicion.
Are you saying you want them to cross the line?
I believe the lack of response to verbal attacks makes it inevitable, Thrawn said. Such actions would put them in position for official discipline, would it not?
Probably.
Vanto holds his hands in front of him, in a gesture of confusion.
But didn't you just... Hold it. I've got a call.
He pulled out his comlink.
Cadet Vanto.
For a minute, he listened in silence.
The voice is human. The words indistinguishable. Vanto's facial muscles tighten, and his facial heat increases. He is first surprised by what he hears, then wary, then suspicious.
Sure, sounds like fun,
Vanto said.
His voice is guarded, but holds none of the weariness revealed in his expression.
We'll be there.
He closed down the comlink.
Well, you may just have gotten your wish, he said.
We've been invited to the metallurgy lab tonight to play cards with Spank Orbar and Rosita Turoy, while they run some corrosion tests on one of their alloy boards.
Are we permitted in the metallurgy lab?
Thrawn asked.
Not unless we have a project we're working on, Vanto said.
His lips compress briefly. His suspicions change to certainty.
Which we don't.
What if we are invited guests of those with such projects?
No such thing, Vanto said. Not in the big labs. If some wandering instructor or officer catches us, they will not be happy. And if the card game includes betting, it'll go even worse. Gambling for credits is strictly forbidden.
That assures they will not attempt such a trap.
No? Why not?
Because if we are charged with gambling, they will be also, Thrawn said.
Vanto shook his head.
You still don't get how it works, do you?
His facial heat increases. His muscle tension also increases. Once again, he shows frustration.
Orbar's family is from here on Coruscant. Worse, they're connected to the planet Senator. He could probably pull anything short of straight-up murder without getting kicked out.
Then we will simply refuse any offers to gamble. Vanto exhales noisily.
You're going to go, aren't you?
His voice is calmer, indicating unwilling acceptance.
We were invited, Thrawn reminded him.
You may stay here if you wish.
Oh, I wish all right, Vanto said. But I don't think letting you wander around alone is what the Emperor had in mind when he put me here. Might as well find out what Orbar has planned.
His head turns a few degrees to the side. He is curious, or perhaps perplexed.
Is this what Chiss do? See a trap and just walk into it? Because that's not how the stories say you operate.
You would be wise to tread carefully around such stories, Thrawn said. Some have been distorted to the point where no truth remains. Some speak only of victories and are silent about defeats. Some have been deliberately crafted to leave false impressions in the hearer.
And which one is this?
Sometimes walking into a trap is the best strategy, Thrawn said. There are few traps that cannot be turned against their designers. What card game did he suggest?
It's called Highland Challenge, Vanto said.
Resigned acceptance.
Come on, I think there's a deck in the lounge. I'll teach you how to play.
I suppose you're wondering,
Orbar said, as he dealt out the first hand,
why we asked you two here tonight.
You said it was to play cards,
Eli said, watching him closely. both Orbar and Turoy were playing it cool, getting Eli and Thrawn at the door, making a big fuss of setting up their corrosion test, then pulling four chairs up to one of the lab tables and bringing out the cards. But the courtesy and friendliness weren't real. Maybe Thrawn still couldn't pick up the subtleties of human expressions, but Eli could. He'd been on the receiving end of his own set of sly smiles and whispered comments since the day they'd arrived, and he'd developed a fine-tuned sense of when he was about to be hit with a joke, trick, or insult. And Orbar and Turoy were definitely winding up for one of the three. Or something worse. At least it wasn't the gambling thing Eli had worried about. Turoy had put up a small fuss when Eli told her that neither he nor Thrawn could afford the extra credits to bet on their game, and she and Orbar had accepted the condition with rolled eyes and thinly veiled scorn. But the fuss hadn't been big enough, and they'd given in too easily. Something else was in the works. He grimaced. Walking into an unknown trap. Was this really how Chiss did things?
Oh, sure. The game was part of it,
Orbar said, finishing the deal and picking up his cards.
Corrosion tests are boring, and you get tired of two-handed games.
He shifted his gaze to Thrawn.
But mostly, I wanted to pick your friend's brain.
On what subject? Thrawn asked, his glowing red eyes narrowing slightly, as he carefully fanned his cards the way Eli had shown him.
Tactics and strategy,
Orbar said.
I'm having some trouble in a couple of my battle simulation classes, and I figured with all your military experience...
At least that's what we've been told,
Turoy put in with a smile. She was smiling way too much tonight.
Right,
Orbar said.
We figured you might be able to help.
I'm happy to share my experience, Thrawn said. Have you a specific question?
I'm interested in the idea of traps,
Orbar said, his voice way too casual.
Take these cards. If I'm holding a King's Lane, there's no way any of you can beat me. But you won't know that until it's too late. How would you prepare for that kind of situation?
One would first study the probabilities, Thrawn said. A King's Lane is indeed unbeatable, but recall that there are three equivalent runs in the deck. Any of them would stagger yours and lead to mutual deadlock.
Turoy snorted.
You have any idea what the odds are against getting two King's Lanes in the same deal?
She asked.
The odds for having two are similar to the odds for having one,
Thrawn pointed out.
But as you say, such runs are rare. More likely you hold a Prince's Lane at best, or a Cube or Triad. In that event, what you described as a trap would more likely be termed simply a battle. His eyes glittered. Or a bluff.
Okay, but you're avoiding the question,
Orbar said.
I asked what you'd do if I had a King's Lane. I didn't ask for a dissertation on game theory.
Let us assume you have the cards you suggest, Thrawn said. As I said earlier, even in that case, your chance of success also depends upon which cards I hold.
He lifted his fanned card slightly.
Knowledge that you do not have.
The premise is that my hand is unbeatable.
There is no such hand,
Thrawn said flatly.
As I suggested earlier, I might have a King's Lane of my own. In that case, a challenge would mean mutual destruction. Your better option would be to avoid my hand and deliver your challenge to a different player.
Orbar flicked a glance at Eli.
That assumes there's another target worth going after.
True, Thrawn said. But mutual destruction is never the preferred option.
He gestured around the table.
You have not yet made your challenge. It is not too late to choose another.
But none would be more satisfying,
Orbar said, smiling tightly.
As you wish,
Thrawn said, shrugging.
A moment, if you will.
He set his cards face down on the table and slipped his hand into his tunic and drew it out, holding his lieutenant's insignia plaque. He fastened it into position on his upper left tunic and picked up his cards again.
I believe you are about to make a challenge.
Eli looked at Orbar and Turoy. Both cadets were staring at the insignia plaque. Their eyes widened, their mouths drooping open. Orbar threw a quick look at Turoy, got a completely unsmiling glance back from her.
What's going on here?
A hard voice called from behind Thrawn. Eli jerked his head around. One of the instructors stood in the lab doorway, his fists on his hips, his expression thunderous as he glared at the cadets around the table.
I assume you all have authorization to be in here,
he growled, striding toward the table.
Cadets Orbar and Turoy are running a test, sir,
Thrawn said, standing up and turning to face the instructor. The other man came to an abrupt halt, his own eyes widening. Enough reaction, Eli thought darkly, to show he'd been in on Orbar's scheme.
Lieutenant,
he breathed.
I... What about him?
He asked, nodding toward Eli.
Cadet Vanto is my translator, Thrawn said calmly. Where I go, he must necessarily accompany me.
The instructor's lip twitched.
I see. I... Very well, Lieutenant. Carry on.
He spun on his heel and beat a hasty retreat. Thrawn watched him go. Then very deliberately, he turned back to the table and gazed down upon the others.
There is no guaranteed winning hand, Cadet Orbar, he said quietly. I suggest you not forget that. Cadet Vanto, I believe we are finished here. Good evening, cadets.
A minute later, he and Eli were back out in the reflected light of the planet-wide city surrounding them, walking along the path leading toward Barracks 2.
Well, that was fun,
Eli commented, wincing at the slight shaking in his voice. Would he never get used to confrontations?
So you knew he was going to pull that?
You yourself suggested his tactic this afternoon,
Thrawn reminded him.
The timing was the only challenge.
The timing?
If I had brought out my insignia plaque too soon, he might have been able to warn off his confederate, Thrawn said. If I had waited until after the instructor's appearance, he could have disciplined me for being improperly uniformed.
Or could have challenged your right to wear it,
Eli pointed out.
You've never worn it before.
Because I'm both officer and cadet, Thrawn said. It is a unique situation, which leads to unique opportunities.
He smiled slightly.
As well as confusion and uncertainties among our opponents. What did you learn tonight?
Eli wrinkled his nose. That Orbar and Turoy were jerks to be avoided in the future? True enough, but probably not what Thrawn was going for.
Anticipate your enemy, he said. Figure out what he's doing, and try to stay a step ahead of him.
A step ahead, or to the side,
Thrawn said, nodding.
When an attack comes, it is usually best to be out of the target zone if possible, thus permitting the energy of the assault to be dissipated elsewhere.
Yes, I can see how that could be handy,
Eli said dryly.
Though I guess you can't always
And without warning, Thrawn put his hand on Eli's shoulder and gave him a violent shove to the side. Eli's comment ended in a startled squeak as his legs hit the knee-high hedge bordering the walkway, the impact and his momentum sending him sprawling over the barrier onto the decorative crushed stone strip on the other side. The squeak turned into a grunt as his arms and shoulder took the brunt of the impact. He shoved himself back up to a sitting position, wincing as the gravel dug into his palms. What the hell? He stiffened. Three hooded men had suddenly appeared, surrounding Thrawn. And as Eli stared in disbelief, they moved in for the kill. For that first stretched-out second, Eli's mind refused to believe it. Things like this didn't happen on the Royal Imperial Academy grounds. They just didn't. But it was happening, right in front of him. The first mad charge seemed to have hit a little off-center, probably because Thrawn's action in shoving Eli over the hedge had similarly pushed the Chiss a meter in the opposite direction. But the assailants were quick. They were back on track now, and were converging on the Chiss. And as Eli watched in disbelief and horror, they attacked. The standard Academy curriculum included a unit on unarmed combat. Unfortunately, with Thrawn's studies focused exclusively on technology and Navy protocol, he hadn't been given any time in the combat dojo. And it showed. He was doing his best to fend off his attackers, but his defense consisted mainly of trying to push them away, ducking away from their attacks, dodging so that they couldn't all come at him at once, and trying to protect his face and torso. But it wasn't enough. Defense alone was never enough. He needed to start adding in a few counterattacks to make an effort to reduce the odds against him. Right now, he was in a battle of attrition, and no matter how much stamina he had, he would almost certainly run out of strength before his attackers did. And then, unbidden, a thought slipped in at the edge of Eli's mind. This could be the end of all his problems. It was a horrible thought, a gruesome thought. And yet, it was startlingly compelling. If Thrawn was so badly injured that he couldn't complete his training, he would have no choice but to drop out. The Emperor's grand experiment, whatever he'd hoped to accomplish by bringing the Chiss into the Navy, would have failed. There would be nothing left to do but take Thrawn back to his exile planet and leave him there. And Eli would be free. The Strikefast was long gone, of course, but he could grab a transport to Myanmar, paying for it out of his own pocket if he had to, and be back on track at the Academy there within a week. Surely Commandant Dean Lark wouldn't want him to stay at Royal Imperial once Thrawn was gone, any more than Eli himself wanted it. Back on Myanmar, back in his proper career path, back to his life. One of the attackers got in a solid punch to Thrawn's lower torso, sending the Chiss down to one knee. And a flood of shame abruptly flowed over Eli's soul. What the hell was he thinking? Hey! He shouted, pushing himself up into a crouch. As he did so, he dug his fingers into the crushed stone beneath him, ignoring the flickers of pain as the sharp edges dug into his skin. Hey, you! Bright Eyes! Two of the three turned to face him. And with all his strength, Eli hurled two handfuls of gravel straight at their faces. He hadn't really expected it to work, but it did. Both attackers howled in pain, belatedly throwing up their hands against the hail of stone. Eli leaned down and dug his hands into the ground again, wondering if he could get another volley into the air before they could recover and respond. Because if he couldn't, if they jumped the hedge and got to him first, he was in serious trouble. Thrawn was still down on one knee, unable to help, and 2-1 odds would be more than enough to take Eli down. Too late. It occurred to him that the assailants had learned their tactics lessons all too well, splitting the enemy force in two parts and demolishing them one at a time was a classic approach to warfare. They'd successfully focused their efforts on Thrawn, and now they were going to do the same to Eli. Only they'd miscalculated. Even as the two attackers started toward Eli, the helpless, all but demolished Thrawn leaned toward the man standing over him and slammed his forearm with muscle-paralyzing force into the man's thigh. The man gasped a startled curse, nearly falling as he clutched at his injured leg. His two friends spun back to him, their drive toward Eli wavering as their focus was suddenly split between their two targets. Eli cocked his arms for his next salvo of gravel.
"Hey!"
someone shouted from nearby. Eli turned to look. Five cadets had emerged from one of the buildings and were racing toward the fight. That was enough for the attackers. They turned and hurried away into the night. The man Thrawn had hit in the leg, supported on either side by his two companions.
"Are you all right?"
Eli blinked away the sudden sweat trickling into his eyes, his body shaking with aftershock. Was it over?
"I'm fine," he told Thrawn, climbing unsteadily over the hedge.
Strangely enough, his voice wasn't trembling at all.
"You?"
"My injuries are minor,"
Thrawn said, easing carefully to a standing position.
"Yeah?"
Eli said, frowning at him. Thrawn's tunic was badly rumpled, and there were spots of oozing blood on both cheeks.
"You sure?"
"It appears worse than it is," Thrawn assured him, gingerly touching one of his cheeks. "Your assistance was most timely. Thank you."
Eli felt his face warm with private shame. If the Chiss knew why he hadn't moved faster...
"Sorry, I couldn't do more," he said.
"I was on the wrong side of the hedge, you know.
I gather you heard them coming?"
"There is a particular tread all predators tend to use,"
Thrawn said, walking over to him.
"A balance between silence and speed. Humans use a version of this tread."
"Ah."
Eli had already known that Chiss eyes were a bit better than those of humans, their visible spectrum edging a bit into the infrared. Apparently their ears were better too.
"Thanks for getting me out of the way. I've had just enough training to know I'm not very good at this."
"You are welcome."
Thrawn looked at the approaching cadets, who had slowed to a jog now that the attackers were gone.
"And now, I believe," he added, "it is finally time for us to see Commandant Dinlar."